We're ready.
Right, good. Rebecca. All right, Rebecca, that's right. All right, Rebecca, good morning, good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Kuf Dalet. So again, so we had Baruch Hashem, those of us who escaped the rain yesterday, we had a beautiful, beautiful daf Gemara. So we're going to pick up, we left off Amar Lahem Libnai Godla Anitzarech. It's five lines up. Five lines up from the middle, from the bottom of Kuf Gimel Amud Beis, middle of lines. Remember, again, this Gemara is going into great detail about the final moments of Rebbe's life and all of the instructions that Rebbe is giving. So, Amar Lahem Lebni Godla Ani Tzarech. So, remember, Rebbe says, I want my oldest son to come in. Nichnas Rabbi Gamliel, that's Rabbi Gamliel, his eldest son, come in. Umasalo Sidre Nesius. And he gave over to his son the proper ways to conduct oneself in a leadership position. Sidre Nesius means how to conduct oneself as a leader, and how do we do that? So the Gemara says, Amarlo, Bini, Rabbi Gamliel, Nahog Nesius Chaberamim. Go ahead and literally, Nahog Nesius Chaberamim means surround yourself with great people, meaning conduct yourself with great people. The more you surround yourself with great people, first of all, the greater the covenant adds to you, and also the greater it elevates you. When you surround yourself by great people, it makes you great as well. Zrok mara b'talmidim, and put fear, literally mara means like poison, put fear into talmidim, meaning that don't be all buddy-buddy or chummy-chummy with people, but rather, again, make sure the talmidim have incredible awe and reverence and respect for you. Ini, is that so? That's how a leader is supposed to conduct himself? But yet the pasuk says that those who fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu we should honor. Va'amar, Ze Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda. This refers to Yehoshaphat, the king of Yehuda. Kishahayaroh Tamid Chacham Omid Mikisah. So listen to how beautiful this is. Yehoshaphat, the king of Yehuda, when he would see a Tamid Chacham, he would get up from his throne. Umechapko Umenashko V'korilo Rebbe Rebbe Mari Mari. Can you imagine what I say? The king of Israel, when he would see a Tamid Chacham, would get up from his throne, would run over to him, would hug the Tamid Chacham, kiss the Talmud Chacham, and we call Talmud Chacham Rebbe, Rebbe, Mari, Mari, my teacher, this is the king of Israel. So you see that here, clearly, there's someone in a leadership position, and yet again, he's not acting with awe and reverence towards Talmud Chacham. No kasha, habitzina habifarhesya. There's a difference between what you do in public and what you do in private. In private, so even the greatest leader should express incredible kavodat Torah for Talmidei Chachamim. In public, however, again, a leader must conduct himself in a certain particular way. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Rebbe Mutal B'Tzipori, Umakom Mukhalom Beis Sha'arim. Rebbe was living in Tzipori, but his burial place was in Beis Sha'arim. So the Gemara says, is that true? Tanya, Tzadik Tzadik Tirdov. Yet the pasuk says, you should run after righteousness. So the Chazal interpreted this to mean that you should go live by Rebbe in Beis Sharm, which indicates to us what? That Rebbe lived in Beis Sharm, not just at a burial place there. To which the Gemara says, you're right, Rebbe Beis Sharm hava. Rebbe lived in Beis Sharm. Ela kevon dechalosh amtiyul itzipori, top of Kuf Dalet, demedalya ubasim avira. Rebbe lived in Beis Sharm, but when he got sick, he went and he relocated to Tzipori. And the reason for that was because apparently the air quality in Tzipori was better. They thought it would help him for his illness. But again, his burial place ultimately was where? Was in Beis Sharm. And this is a very moving Gemara. Hahu yoma dinach nafshei de Rebbe. On the day that literally Rebbe was going to die, gazu rabbanan ta'anisa. The rabbis decreed a fast day. Uba'u rachame. And they davened. Va'omri command Amr Nachnaf Shay the Rebbe, Yidakir Bakharif, and they said whoever says that Rebbe dies will be stabbed with a sword. In other words, they said, no one tell us that Rebbe died, because the idea behind that, Rashi points out, is because again, as long as they think Rebbe is alive, they can keep davening and potentially turn the gzera. The moment that somebody says Rebbe's dead, they have to stop davening. So they didn't want to stop davening, they want to continue to daven. So obviously it's not literal that whoever says Rebbe died is going to be killed, but the idea is no one should say that Rebbe died. I'm Sid Rebbe Le'igra. So we'll say Rebbe's maidservant. Now the Gemara talks extensively in other Masechtos about Rebbe's maidservant. Rebbe's maidservant was a very unique and pious woman. So Rebbe's maidservant went up to the rooftop. So we'll say Amri El Yoni Mevakshines Rebbe Vatachton Mevakshines Rebbe. So we'll say she goes up to the rooftop and what does she see? Literally, there's like throngs of people gathered outside of Rebbe's house and they're davening. They're davening for Rebbe. So she says, Tachalish Baruch Hu, she says, Ribono Shalom, El Yonim Avakshanes Rebbe, the celestial sphere, they want Rebbe, meaning they want to take back his neshama, Vatachton Avakshanes Rebbe, and the people here on earth, they want Rebbe, Yiratzon Sheikafu Tachton Mesal Yonim, Tachalish Baruch Hu, it should be your will that the ones on the earth should conquer the ones above. In other words, that the tfilos of us here should be able to hold on to Rebbe. However, kibun dechazay comes in the ayla beis akise vechalatzun l'malach luhu vechamet star. But when she saw Rebbe suffered from terrible intestinal illness, when she saw how many times Rebbe had to go to the bathroom and putting on his tefillin and taking off his tefillin, and she saw the incredible tsar that he had, so Amr, she changed her tefillin. She said, Yiratzon sheikafu al yonim esatachvon, mishabiru ala kadosh baruch hu, that literally those above should be able to overcome those below. In other words, she davened for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take Rebbe's neshama. The Rabbah said, this Gemara is very important because this is the makar, one of the makoros, the idea that when a person is suffering from a terminal illness, that under certain circumstances, it is permissible to daven for a person that they should die. That it is permissible to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the Ribono Shel Olam should spare them from their suffering. So what does she do? Below have a shaski. There's one problem. So remember, Amsid Rebbe realizes Rebbe's going to die from this illness. He's going to die. But again, he's suffering terribly. The problem is, so why don't they take his neshama? Because the tefillos down here are so intense that quite literally, again, they can't take his neshama. So what does she do? The rabbis are not stopping to daven to ask compassion, and it's that compassion that's keeping Rebbe's neshama trapped in his body. So what does she do? Shakla kuza shajim igra la'ara. She took an earthenware vessel, she threw it off the roof onto the ground, and when it hit the ground and it broke, that noise silenced everyone for just a moment. Ishtiku merachami. The tefillos were silenced for a moment, and in that moment, the nachnaf shei Rebbe. Ultimately, in that moment, again, the neshama of Rebbe was able to leave his body. And you should know, just this Gemara has many different ramifications from a halachic perspective in terms of certain aspects of end-of-life care. The concept that we do not extend life at all costs, we do not extend life in every single situation, that there are certain times where ultimately, again, it is permitted to allow a person to pass. Again, this is not our topic for today, but just understand, it's not just the story, it's actually a story that has many lamais ramifications. So we'll say, now remember, at this point in time, no one knows what happened. No one knows that Rebbe's died. All they do know, however, is again, everybody just stopped. Yes?
We're giving more credence to the Amsei de Rebbe than the Chachamim who said anybody that stops davening is going to be killed? The Chachamim said nobody stopped davening.
Right, but they stopped davening.
In other words, the Chachamim said don't stop davening, and the Amsei de Rebbe decided that they should stop davening. And you're saying in halacha we give more credence to the Amsei de Rebbe?
It's not a question of halacha, it's a question of what happened.
No, you're saying that we learn from here that there are certain times where...
Correct. The proof is he's dead. The proof is HaKadosh Baruch Hu sided with Amsa the Rebbe. Right? Meaning, again, if she was wrong, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have taken his neshama. The fact that obviously in that moment when he died, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that it was time indicates that Lamaisa there was something to her Shita. So the Gemara says, what happened? Amar li Rabbanan le Bar Kafra, Zil Ayin. So we'll say, so now, again, remember, no one knows that Rebbe's dead yet, except his maidservant. So they said to Bar Kafra, go see what's going on. Azul Ashkechei Denach Nafshe. So Bar Kafra went in and he saw that Rebbe had died. Kari le Levushe, Vahadri le Kari le Achori. So we'll say, so Bar Kafra tore his clothing and he turned the tear around. Remember, again, he did not, we'll say, this is very important. So, you know, we live in an age where, you know, everybody, you know, it's all about, like, breaking the story. Like, who's going to have the latest information? And sometimes you see, like, people, like, they just love to be the bearer of information, even if it's bad news. There's a concept in Judaism in general that one should never be the bearer of bad news. So the problem over here is Bar Kafra knows that Rebbe's dead. He has to go back, so he tore his clothing, but he turned his clothing around so that when he came back to his rabbinic colleagues, no one would be able to see the tear. He did not want to be the one who was the bearer of bad news. So what happened? Pasach va'amar. So he comes back to the rabbis, and obviously they ask him, knew like what happened. So we're supposed to listen to this. Pasach va'amar. Erelim umutzukim achsu ba'aron hakodesh. The Malachim and the Tzadikim literally were fighting over the Aron Kodesh. I'm going to say it's a metaphor. So the Malachim refers to Shamayim, the Tzadikim refers to the people down here, and the Aron Kodesh is Rebbe. So literally there's a tug of war between Shamayim and Aretz, who's going to hold on to the Aron. Nitzchu Ereilim es Hamatzukim v'nishpa Aron Kodesh. And Bar Kafra says, the Malachim won, and the Aron is gone. Amrulei nach nafshei. They said to Bar Kafra, telling us that Rebbe's dead. Amruluhu ason kamrisu. Ana lo kamina. You said it, I didn't say it. B'shas p'ti rasol shal Rebbe. I will say, again, the idea over there is not like a, the idea that Bar Kafra just didn't want to be the one who said the words. So he conveyed the message, they understood the message, but he didn't want to say the words. So let's listen to how beautiful this is. B'shas p'ti rasol shal Rebbe, zokov eser atzbos klapi malo. In the moment that Rebbe was going to die, he extended his 10 fingers heavenward. You know how much I toiled with my 10 fingers, in Torah. And I didn't enjoy from this world even one little pinky's worth. Now, I will say, Rebbe was very wealthy. The idea that Rebbe was saying is, I devoted all of my kochos to Torah, and I did not devote my kochos ultimately to just physical enjoyment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there should be shalom in my menucha. There should be shalom ultimately again in my passing. Also, what Rebbe was asking is that ultimately my death itself, death, the concept that the process of death can be turbulent, or the process of death can be tranquil. So Rebbe says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because I devoted my life to you, please HaKadosh Baruch Hu, make sure that my death is a tranquil one. Yatza Sabas Kova Amra, Yavo Shalom Yanuchu Alma Amish Kavosam. So Baskol came out and quoted again from the pasuk from Yeshaya. Yavo Shalom, Rebbe, come in peace. Yanuchu Amish Kavosam. They will rest on their resting places. So the Gemara says, now what the Gemara is bothered by is why the pasuk switches from singular to plural, right? Amishkav Chamibayle. It shouldn't say you should rest. It should rest. They shall rest on their resting places. It should say what? He shall rest on his resting place, singular. So the Gemara says, B'seyle Rebbe Chiyah Bar Gamdo. This supports Rabbi Chiya Bar Gamda. Rabbi Chiya Bar Gamda, Amar Rabbi Yosi ben Shaul, B'shosha Tzadik Nifta Min HaOlam, when a Tzadik leaves this world, Omri Malach Yashar Sinai HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Malachim say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Tzadik Ploni Ba. So the Malachim say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, so Tzadik so-and-so is coming to Shemayim. Omri Lohem, Yavo'u Tzadikim V'yetzu L'krasov. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells, let all the Tzadikim in Gan Eden and Shemayim come and greet this tzaddik who is now ascending. But Omrim Lo, and the tzaddikim say to this neshama who's coming, Yavo b'shalom, come in peace, Yanuchu amish kabosam, and then all of the other neshamas go back to their resting places. So they leave their resting places. So ultimately, Yavo shalom is what they tell the person who just died, the new neshama, come in peace, and Yanuchu amish kabosam is they all leave their resting place in order to greet the tzaddik. But then ultimately, again, they say to themselves, or HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to them, go back to your resting places. Amar Rabbi Elazar, B'shar Sha'at Tzadik, Niftra Min HaOlam, Shalosh Kito Shemalachi Hasharis Yotzeis L'Krasso. When a Tzadik leaves this world, three groups of Malachi Hasharis come to greet the Nefesh, the Neshama of the Tzadik. Achas Omeres Lo Bo B'Shalom. One group says to the Tzadik, come in peace. V'achas omeres holich nachacho. One says, continue on the straight path. V'achas omeres lo yavo shalom yanuchu amish kavosam. And one says, come in peace, let everyone rest on their resting places. On the other hand, b'shar sharasha neva min ha'olam. But when the Rasha leaves this world, shalosh kito shamalachi chavala yotzeis likraso. There are three groups. A malachi chavala. We'll say malachi chavala means angels of destruction that come to greet the Rasha. So achas omer ein shalom omer Hashem l'rishayim. So one group says there is no peace for the wicked, says God. Va'achas omeres l'ma'atseva yishkav. The other one says you will go ahead and literally you will rest in your atzos, in your sadness, meaning you will literally sleep in the bed that you created for yourself. Va'achas omeres redeva hashkava es erilim. And the other one says, ultimately again, go ahead, go down, and sleep again. Arelim refers to the uncircumcised ones, meaning with the Rishoyim. So we'll say, it's an amazing thing. So if you lived a good life, the Malachi Ashares, ultimately again, go ahead, and the Kitos Malachi Ashares come and greet you. Person Chas Hashem leads a negative life, the Malachi Chabala come to greet them as they enter into the celestial abode. Says the Mishnah, Kozman Shiri Beisavia, Govik Svaslam Moses. Now we get into a very interesting sugya. The sugya essentially deals with, is there a statute of limitations on ksuba collection or not? So the Mishnah says like this, as long as she is residing in her father's home, gova ksuba saliolam, she could collect her ksuba forever, meaning there's no statute of limitations on ksuba collection. On the other hand, but however, again, if she's residing in her husband's home, her deceased husband's home, then what? She has 25 years in which to collect her ksuba. But if she does not claim her ksuba within 25 years, then what? She no longer has that right to claim it. Now, what's the logic? Listen to this. The assumption is that when a woman is living in her husband's home, what is she doing? The neighbors come along, and ask her to borrow some milk or some sugar, some eggs. So 25 years of favors, we assume means what? Equals what? Equals the amount of the ksuva. So meaning if she's been living in her husband's home and she hasn't claimed the ksuva for 25 years, we assume that the amount of quote-unquote favors she has done for the other, that has depleted her ksuva amount. These are the words of These words were Rav Meir and Rav Gamliel. On the other hand, Chacham say, no. If she's living in her husband's home, so she could collect the ksuva forever. But Rav said, if she's living in her father's home, she has 25 years to collect her ksuva. And Rav said, we will see that the logic of the Chacham is, what the logic of the Chacham is like this, that if she's living in her husband's home, so the assumption is that she's too embarrassed to go out and collect her ksuba, right? Because since the Arshim are taking care of her, therefore she doesn't want to ask for it. If she's living in her father's home, she's not too embarrassed, and therefore lemaisa what? If she does not ask for it within 25 years, we assume that what? That she's been mochel, that she's been given up. So we'll say, fundamental machlokes to Rabbi Meir and the Chacham. According to Rabbi Meir, if she's living in her father's home, she could collect the ksuba forever. Right, because according to Rabbi Meir, there's an assumption that she's never mochel on the ksuva. If she's living in her husband's home, the issue is again over the course of 25 years, we assume she has used up her ksuva in what? In the favors that she's done for her neighbors. According again to the Chachamim, no, if she's living in her father's home, she has 25 years to collect her ksuva, because you know, she doesn't say anything until that point in time, then what? Then the assumption is the maestro, she's given it up. But she's living in her husband's home, because the Yerushim are taking care of her, her non-mentioning the ksuva for 25 years does not mean she's given it up. It just assumes means that what? She's embarrassed, right? They're taking such good care of her, she's embarrassed to ask for the ksuva from them, and therefore again, she does not give up her right at all. Mesa, if she dies, Yarshin maskirin ksuvas ad esrif b'chameshram. So we'll say if she dies, her Yarshin, those who inherit her and thereby inherit her ksuva, essentially have the same rights as she does. Meaning that Lemaisa, they have 25 years in which to collect their mother's ksuva as well. Says the Gemara, Armali Abayi Rav Yosef, Ani Yerusha b'Yisrael ad esrif b'chameshram. Umarta bas baitus ad esrif b'chameshram. So we'll say, remember again, according to Rabbi Meir, if she's living in her husband's home, so the Maya says she has 25 years to collect her ksuba, but after 25 years, she no longer has a ksuba, right? Because we assume that she's used up her ksuba with what? With doing favors for her friends. So we'll say what's interesting over here is the Mishnah doesn't make a distinction between the financial standing of the woman. So he's saying to me that a woman who's an ani, right, uses up her ksuba in 25 years, and Marta Bas Baitus is one of the wealthiest women in Yerushalayim. She also uses up her ksuba in 25 years, meaning you're not going to make a distinction between if the woman is rich or the woman is poor, to which the Gemara says, Amrle lefum gamla shichna, according to the camel is the load. In other words, they both say that just like Marta Bas Baitus is wealthier, and therefore by definition she has a larger ksuba, the assumption is what? She also does a lot more favors for her neighbors, right? The Aniya has less money, has less ksuva, and ultimately what? Does less favors, or does the same, could be the same amount of favors, but the financial, right, the value of those favors is less. The idea is, it's relative, but at the end of the day, it all comes out essentially to be the same. See, Bari Lehu, you might ask the Kasha. Rabbi Meir, Mao Shetishash, now this is interesting. So Rabbi Meir's logic is that if a woman is living in her husband's home, then she's doing favors. Now remember, again, Rabbi say those favors, you know, what according to Meir says, that money's got to come from somewhere. So remember, the Yarshim are not responsible for making sure that she has enough eggs or milk or sugar or whatever to give to her neighbors. So if she's doing that, that's coming, Rabbi Meir says, from her own money, which her money represents the ksuva. So Rabbi says, the interesting shaila is like this. According to Rabbi Meir, is it 25 years all or nothing, or do we prorate it? I was about to say, let's say she claims her ksuva after 5 years. So do we say, okay, we're going to give you your ksuva as 20 years, right? Or excuse me, we're going to give you your ksuva minus 5 years worth of favors. Or do we not prorate it at all? We just say after 25 years, the assumption is what? That she's depleted her ksuva amount. So which the Gemara says, teku. It's a good kasha, according to the Meir, we're not sure. The Chacham Kozman, remember the Chachamim say on the other hand, that's what? The Chachamim say, if she's living in her father's home, so indeed she has 25 years to go ahead and claim her ksuva, because the assumption is that if she doesn't claim her ksuva within 25 years, that she's been mochel or mocheles. But if she's living in the house of the Yarshim, not mentioning the ksuva for 25 years does not mean she's not mochel. She can collect it forever, because we assume the reason that she did not bring it up is because what? Because she's embarrassed to ask for the ksuva. Somali Abayi Rav Yosef, So Abayi says, so let's listen to this. And we'll say, this question always comes up. So remember, Abayi says, Rav Yosef, I understand. Asoi kodem shkiyas achama, govek suvasa, la'achar shkiyas achama lo gavya. By he part achil, so let's get this straight. So we'll say, let's say she's living at her father's home. So she's living at her father's home. How long does she have to collect her ksuba? How long does she have? 25 years. So now what you're telling me is like this. If she shows up before shkia, before sunset of the last day of the 25th year to claim her ksuba, then what? Then what? Then she can collect the whole thing. But if she shows up after shkia, after sunset of the 25th year, now what? Now she's been mochel. So you're telling me now that 5 minutes ago she's not mochel, and 5 minutes later she's mochel everything? Amalei, and I will say, now we always have this kasha. Amalei, he said, yes. Kol midas chachamim kenhi. Rabbi say, this is always the case with any shir. Any shir always has what? Always has a cutoff. Always, for example, he says, Barboim sa'a tovel, barboim sa'a chasa kurtav, in yachal litbol. For example, we know a mikvah has to have 40 sa'a. What happens if the mikvah has 40 sa'a minus a drop? What's the halacha? The mikvah is not good. So meaning, yes, and we'll say, so essentially what we're saying is every shir, every rabbinic shir, and it's biblical shir also always has to have a cutoff. I'm Rabbi Tom Rav. Hey, Rabbi Shom Rabbi Yossi, Lefnei Rabbi, Sh'omer Mishum Aviv, Lo Shanu Ela She'in Shtar Ksuva Yotzi Mitachas Yado. Oh, so we'll say, it comes on like this. When do we say that a woman is mochel, her ksuva? That's only if she no longer has the document. If she doesn't have the document anymore, then we could assume after a certain amount of time elapses, so Lamaisa, she's been mochel the ksuva. Because again, if she wasn't mochel, then what? She'd be holding on to her document. Aval shtar ksuva yotzi mitachas yada. But Rabbi says, she's still holding on to her document. That's a sign that what? That she's not mocheles. And therefore, gova ksuva sali olam. She could collect her ksuva forever. Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Elazar says, no, afilu shtar ksuva yotzi mitachas yada. Ein gova ela ad esrim v'chamishna. So Rabbi say, fundamental machlok is between all of these rabbis. We'll call them Rebbe and Rebbe Loza. So Rebbe says that what, as long as she has her document, no mechila. Which Rabbi say, the logic behind it is because if she was really mocha, what would she do with the document? What would she do with it? Whatever it is, she'd give it back to the Yisomim, she'd tear it up. But if she's holding on to that document, that's a sign that she has not relinquished her right to the ksuva. That Rabbi Loza says no. Even if she's holding on to the document, there still is the 25-year statute of limitation on collection. So the Gemara says, So Masiv, Rav Sheshet raises the kasha, Balchov, if someone is a creditor, Gove Shalo Bahaskara. So he could collect, the creditor could collect, even if he never mentioned the debt, meaning even if he was quiet for 25 years and never said anything, he can still collect the debt. So, hey, Chidami, what's the case? If the creditor no longer has a document, the Maigavi, then what would he be able to collect with? Ella dinokit shtara. Rather, it must be that what he has the document in his hand. Ubal chov hu delav barachule, and it's only a balchov who we assume does not give up, does not relinquish his debt. Ha amana achiltu, but we assume after 25 years, and amana, right, a widow does give up her ksuva. So who mosiv la v'hu mefarik la? So we'll say he asks the question, he answers it. The olam delo nokit shtara. Oh, what's the case of Rabbi said by the Baal Chov? The case by the Baal Chov is where he no longer has the document. If he no longer has the document, then how can he collect? Rabbi said, the case over here is where what? You have a very honest borrower, and the borrower admits that he still owes the debt. So Rabbi said, even after 25 years, if the creditor no longer has the debt, but the borrower admits that he owes the debt, then what? And the creditor is able to collect. I, Bahamar Rabbi Law, Shonin, Grusha, Hari, Baal Chov. But yet we learned. We learn that a grusha, a divorcee, is like a balchov. So what does that mean? Hei chidomi. Id lo nikita ksuva. If she no longer has her ksuva, my gavya, then what is she collecting with? Alav de nikita ksuva. Right, they must see she has a ksuva. Ugrusha hi delav bas achulehi. I will say, it's in the case of a grusha, we assume that a grusha is not mochelas on her ksuva. Which I will say makes sense. Why would a grusha not be mochelas on her ksuva? For a very simple reason. Remember, first of all, she's divorced, right? Which bepashtos means that probably there's not too much goodwill between the two parties. And furthermore, remember, she's not getting anything else from the estate, right? There's no support. When a woman is divorced, she's divorced. So the assumption is that a grusha is not mochelas. Ha amana achilta. But yet, in Amon, after 25 years, well, what? We could assume that she's mocheles. So to the case over here will be when the chayiv, when in this case again, lemaisa, the yarshim, right, the yarshim of the estate, admits the fact that she never received her ksuva. Amram Nachar by Yitzchak, Tani Rabbi Yehuda bar Kaza, Masnisa, the Bei bar Kaza. So Rav Nachar by Yitzchak said that they taught, Rabbi Yehuda bar Kaza taught in a Mishnah stated in the Yeshiva bar Kaza, Tava ksuvasa, if she claimed her ksuva, Hare hi kibetchilo. Ultimately, again, the clock starts again. Rabosei, and this is very interesting. So what they're teaching in the Bar Kaza Yeshiva, Rabosei, is that, remember, let's assume we have this 25-year statute of limitation on collections. But if she claims her ksuba, let's say she says to the Yisomim, I'd like to collect my ksuba. But she says to them, it's okay, don't pay me now. I just want to let you know that I do want my ksuba. Every single time she claims her ksuba, what does that do? It restarts the 25-year clock. So you could have an aman, Rabosei. Remember, again, sometimes it's in an amara's best interest not to collect her ksuva. Because remember, again, when she collects her ksuva, once she gets that payout, then what happens? Mizonos ends. So if she has a good relationship with the Yisomim, it could be a zenen of a zenen. Because remember, from the Yisomim's perspective, sometimes they'd rather continue to give her mizonos than have to pay out that lump sum. Because you could have a woman who has a very generous ksuva. In which case, again, the Yisomim are going to have to gather that money for them, even though Rabbi said, you know, it could work that if she's in relatively good health, you know, they could say, you know, by the way, how are you feeling these days? You know, so remember, again, if she's not feeling so well, so it may be in their best interest to continue the mizonos, not to pay the ksuva. But if she, Baruch Hashem, is very physically fit, then the mice, again, it could turn out that over time, they could pay a lot of money for mizonos, but still, they may prefer that than what? Than having to go ahead and have to pay out the lump sum ksuva. So therefore, again, you could have a situation, but yeah, she does not want to relinquish her right to the ksuva. So what does she do? You know, every 24 years, what does she say to the Yarshim? Oh, by the way, you know, I just want to let you know, I'm really looking forward to collecting my ksuva. Fine, noted. And then what does that do? But she says, don't worry, it's not a rush. I just want you to know I want to collect the ksuva. In which case, what that does, according to Yeshiva Bar Kaza, it resets the clock for another 25 years. But if she's holding on to her document, if she has a document, then what? Then she never even has to do this. Apparently what they're saying is like this, if she no longer has her ksuva, she lost the document. The absence of the document only poses a problem if what? If someone's contesting it. But assuming that she gets along fabulously with the Yarshim, and they're not contesting the fact that they ordered the ksuva, so she doesn't need another document. So if she doesn't need another document, all she needs to do is refresh her claim every 24 years. But if she has a document, she doesn't have to refresh it at all. Why? Because that document is her document of entitlement. To which the Gemara says, So they wanted to know, when is the machlokas Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim? Remember, we have machlokas in the Mishnah, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, right? Rabbi Meir again says, Rabbi Meir was the first opinion, and Rabbi Meir says that if she's living in her husband's home, then Lamaisa, after 25 years, she no longer has the right to collect her ksuva, because the assumption is that she's burned through that amount with favors that she's done. But if she's living in her father's home, she has 25 years. The Chum, on the other hand, say that what? If she's living in her father's home, she has 25 years. But if she's living in her husband's home, then what? She could collect forever. Because the only reason she hasn't expressed a desire to collect is because she's embarrassed. The Sum are taking such good care of her, so she's embarrassed to ask. So they ask, so what is the Machlok Shemir in the Chum? Is that a case of where there is a ksuva? Did they argue in that case as well? Or is it in a case where they don't have a ksuva? And by the way, at the end of the day, who do we paskin like? So the Gemara says, Shalach leg, b'she'in k'shtar ksuvi yotzi mitachas edam machlokes. So the machlokes yomer nechachamim is when there is no ksuva. Aval shtar ksuvi yotzi mitachas yada, gove ksuva saliolam. So the machlokes yomer nechachamim is only when what? When there is no shtar ksuva. But everyone agrees that if there is a shtar, then what? How long? What's her statute of limitations for collection? There is none. If she has that document, she has the right to collect forever. But Rabbi said the bottom line is, in the absence of a ksuba, if she's living in her father's home, she has 25 years to collect. But if she's living in her husband's home, then what? No statute of limitations on collection. Rabbi said the Machlokes Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is only on the Iker Ksuva, Aval Tosefes Yeshla. But Rabbi say everybody will agree that what? That the Tosefes he owes her. And I will say the logic behind that is, because according to this approach, the Tosefes is not part of the Ksuva. The Tosefes is considered to be an additional debt that husband owes wife. Rabbi Avo, Am Rabbi Yochanan, Filo Tosefes, Einla. Dam Rabbi Aibu, Am Rabbi Yanai, Tanai Ksuva Ki Ksuva Dami. So Rabbi say this is how we paskin. We say, now remember again, for our purposes, we never make a distinction between Tosefes and Iker. They're all called Ksuva. And therefore, the Ma'isik and Abosai, if she has the document, she could collect forever. If she doesn't have a document, we pass like the Chachamim. So if she's living in her father's home, she has 25 years to collect. But if she's living in her husband's home, then what? She could collect forever.
Tosefes is also written in.
Correct. Usually, Tosefes is written in. Itmar Nami, Am Rabbi Avraham Huna, Am Rav, Lo Shner Elaman Masayin, Avat Tosefes Yeshla. And I was thinking we have an explicit statement that says over here, again, that Lamaisa, this is different than what we learned originally, that in the name of Rav, they said that the Machlok is only with the Iker Ksuva, but Tosefes she has. Amrali Rabbi Amr Rafuna, Amrav Hachi, Amr La, excuse me, I'm sorry. So we'll say, let me just read that again. It's Mar Nami, we learned this also. This discussion was stated in another Braisa as well. Amrabi Amr Rafuna, Amr Rav, Lo Shanu Elaman Masayin. That Rav said no, that again, Rav said this whole discussion is only concerning the Iker Ksuva. About Tosefes Yeshla, but Rav says that Tosefes she always has, because that's like an additional debt. Amarli Rabbi Abba Rav Huna, Amar Rav Hachi. So Rabbi Abba said to Rav Huna, who was making it, remember, Rav Huna was only made the statement that Rav said that the Machlokis is only about Iker Ksuva, but when it comes to Tosefes, she has it. So Rabbi Abba said to Rav Huna, did Rav really say this? So we'll say this is very cute. So Rav Huna says back to Rabbi Abba, Amarle, Ishtikin Kaamrit or Ishkayin Kaamrit? When you ask me that question, are you asking me that question to silence me? Meaning, are you telling me, essentially, that's a nice way of saying what? Yes. Rav did not say that. Or Ishkayim. Or are you inviting me to have a lechayim with you because you're going ahead and you're telling me that that's exactly what Rav said? So I was like, right? So I mean, are you saying, you know, when he says, when Rabbi Abba says to Rav Huna, is that really what Rav said? So are you telling me that? Are you telling to me, be quiet, I'm wrong? Or are you telling me, shkoyach, let's make a lechayim, that's what Rav said? To which Rabbi Abba said, Amrle, Ishtakin come here. I'm telling you to be quiet. Right? In other words, that's not what Rav said. Rabbi said, but Rav, the halacha says, like we just said before, namely, that Tosefes Ksuva is treated the same way as Iker Ksuva. That the additional amounts are considered to be like the regular amounts, and therefore, again, same halachas govern the Tosefes as govern the Iker. Chamsei, this is an interesting case as well. Chamsei Drevchia Aricho, listen to this. So we'll say, so the mother-in-law of Rav Chia Aricha married Rav Chia Aricha's brother. Okay, so meaning it's totally permitted. So his mother-in-law married his brother. And then what happened? Then Rav Chia's brother, I'm not encouraging it. I'm just saying it's legal, right? So again, so you understand, this is mamish means like you're related to your mother-in-law in two ways. So mamish is your mother-in-law, she's also your sister-in-law. So what happens now? Rav Chia's brother died. Rav Chia's brother died. Rav Chia now is the executor of the estate. So what happens? So the Amana, so remember again, Rav Chia's sister-in-law, his deceased brother's wife, who also happens to be his mother-in-law, goes back to live in her father's home. So what happens? Bizona Esim Chamishnin. And what happens? She was being supported by the estate for 25 years, Bebe Nasha, and she's living in her father's home. Lisof Amrale Havli Mizone. After 25 years, so she says to Rav Chia, I still want my Mizonos. Amrale Leslach Mizone. Rav Chia says, no. 25 years, you've exhausted your mizono supply. Havli ksuva, gi my ksuva. Amar lo mizoni islach, lo ksuva islach. And he said to her, no, you, after 25 years again now, you've exhausted your support from the estate. So tavasi ledina. So the mother-in-law, the mother-in-law / sister-in-law takes Rav Chia to Beis Din, saying to Rav Chia that you should have to pin my ksuva. So what happens? So tavasi ledina kame diraba barshila. So she brings Rav Chia, her brother-in-law / son-in-law, to Beis Din in front of Rabbi Bar Shila. Amar le, ema li izi gufa du'uv dehechi hava. So Rabbi Bar Shila says, okay, tell me exactly what happened. So Amar le, zinsa, excuse me, not zinsa, zanisa esrim v'chamesh shanim. I supported her for 25 years, b'vei nash, in her father's home. B'chaye demar, dikaspoi amati le. So listen to this. So he says again. So Rav Chiya says, by the life of Mar, the Kaspaim Tilei. Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, the Kaspaim Tilei Mizonasim Hayom Liyom. Meaning, I gave again. Literally, I used to carry her food on my shoulders. Meaning, Rav Chiya says, look, for 25 years we took care of her. We did exactly what we were obligated to do. Amar Lei, time of my Amar Rabbanan calls Mount Shiva based Baila Govek Suvas Ali Olam Darmina Mishum Kisufahu Delotava. So now, Rabbi Paskin is like this. Rabbi says, Rav Chiya, why is it that when a woman is living in her father's home, in her deceased husband's home, why is it that we say that she could collect her ksuba forever, and we don't say the fact that she didn't mention it for 25 years, that she's relinquished that right? It's because she's embarrassed, because since the Yarshim are taking care of her, so she doesn't want to look like an ingrate by asking for her ksuba. So the Gemara says, "Hacha nami mishum kisufahu delotava." So too over here, Rav Chiya, you are bringing your mother-in-law slash sister-in-law her meals every single day. You are going above and beyond. She had incredible hakaras hatov. Therefore, again, she was embarrassed to ask for her ksuva from you. But nevertheless, what? She did not relinquish her rights. Therefore, zil havle, give for her ksuva. Give her ksuva. Lo ashkach. So Rav Chiya disagreed with Rabba's Psak, and he did not pay any attention to Rabba's Psak. Okay. Kasavla ad karta anachase. So Rabba says, so what happened? So Rabba gave the widow a document that gave her the right to seize property. So you're going to remember, now at this point in time, Rav Chiya is in violation of the Psak Beis Din. Rabba paskind that the widow is entitled to collect her ksuva. Rav Chiya is not listening to the Beis Din. So Rabba gives the widow a document that says you are permitted to now seize property in satisfaction of your ksuva. Also lekamei derava. So they came before Rava. Amar lechazimar hechi danan. So we'll say Rav Chiya comes to Rava all upset. Look how Rabba paskind. Rabba's wrong. So Amar le shapir dancha. So Rabba, what are you talking about? Now is Rabba speaking to Rav Chiya? Rabba was not wrong. Rabba paskin exactly correctly. You owe her the ksuba. Shapir dancha. Amar le ihachi lezol lehadir liperi diminahu yoma ad haidna. So listen to this. So the widow says to Rabba. Now I'll say, just keep in mind all the names. So the widow says to Rabba, if indeed Rabba was correct, Rabba, the one who made the initial psak, if Rabba was correct, that means that really not only does Rav Chiya owe me the lands for the ksuva, but he also owes me the peros that those lands produced from the moment of the psak din, because I was entitled to that land, and I want back, now she's getting a little bit aggressive, I want back peros as well. So the Gemara says, okay, Amrele, ach vilo ad kartech, show me your documents. So Megan Rabbo say, so she's got a point, meaning if she's owed the land, then she's owed the back peros as well. Says, show me your document. Chazye, de la havik suvba, so he looked at the document, and he saw he was missing the following clause. Normally, Rabbo say, in a clause that allows a woman to collect property in satisfaction of her ksuba, you would have the following clause: v'ishtamudana dinechasim elu demisne inun. The document Rabbi Yosef would normally say that we empower the almana to collect from properties that belonged to the deceased. Rabbi Yosef, this is very important. When an almana has a right to collect property, her right of collection is limited to what? Properties that belonged to the deceased. But she does not have the right to collect what? Personal properties from the Yesomim, or from the heirs, right? Remember, again, I've also we've spoken about this before, that estate liability, or I should say the liability of the Yesomim, is capped at the liability of the estate. The Yesomim themselves never become personally liable. Therefore, I will say, whenever a Beis Din would give an Amana a right to collect properties in satisfaction of a Ksuva, they must write in that document what? A clause that says that you are permitted to collect your Ksuva from properties that belong to the deceased. I will say, what's the problem? If you don't write that clause in there, then what does it look like? What does it look like? That she would even have the right to seize property from the Yesomim themselves. So I'm really supposed to say, here's the problem. This document of collection that Rabba wrote for the Almana did not have this clause, which looks like what? That she could collect any property she wants from Rav Chiya. So Amarla, so therefore again, Rabba has to tell her, I'm sorry, it's karta lav shapir ksuva. your document is void because it was wrong. It was written incorrectly. And I was saying, here's what's fascinating. So what Rava is now saying to this woman is, the halacha is like you, meaning Rabba was writing this psak, namely, that you are entitled to ksura. Because the logic was sound. The logic was that even though she didn't claim it 25 years and she was living in her father's home, and normally we pass like the chachamim, that's what, that if a woman doesn't claim her ksura for 25 years while she's living in her husband's home, in her father's home, she has given up her right to ksuba. We assume that she's yielded, that's right. This case was different. Why? Because since Rav Chiya was bringing her the meals every single day, she felt awkward claiming her ksuba, but she never yielded, that's right. So therefore, Rabba was correct in saying she's entitled to a ksuba. What's the problem? The problem is that the document that Rabba wrote for her is an incorrect document, because that document gave her rights of collection even over Rav Chiya's personal property, and she does not have rights to that. And Moshe has rights in what? To collect from her deceased husband's property, but not from Chiya's personal property. Therefore, I'm Amrla Adkarta La Shaper Ksiva. Amrle, Tezil Adkarta, Ishko Miyoma Dishalimi Yoma Askarta Adhashta. So she said, fine. But Elisa was saying, no, the halacha is like this. The halacha is that when they would normally go ahead and write a document allowing for collection, so there would be in a certain amount of time for announcements, meaning that Beis Din, if you look at Rashi for just a moment, Rashi says over here, Eshkol, Piri Miyom Shematsasi Sada Misados Hamis, Ver Isi Ad Karka Shabiyadi Le Beis Din, Vishamua Vechriza Allah Lamidyob. So, we'll listen to this. So, normally what would happen is the following. Beis Din would give an Amana a document that says you have the right to collect property. The Amana then would have the obligation to identify a piece of property that she wanted in satisfaction of her ksuba. She would go to Beis Din. She said, I want field A. Beis Din would then go ahead and what? Do their homework and make sure the valuation was correct. Beis Din would then make an announcement for 30 days. And the announcement for 30 days was what? That they were going to give this piece of property to an Amana in satisfaction of her debt. If anyone has any other claims against this piece of property, come forward now. So what she says is like this. Even if you want to say that my document is void, my claim should still be valid as of what? As of the time that Beis Din made their announcement that they are going to seize property A in satisfaction of my ksuba. Because even if the document is incorrect, at the end of the day, Beis Din's seizure should still be correct. So at least let me get the land plus back payros from the end of those 30 days.
Why should the document be void? The document just goes further than
right.
It should have.
Right.
It imposes personal liability.
Which makes it void.
But why not just enforce it to the extent of the...
Because that's not what the document says. Because what he's saying is the document creates personal liability when there is no personal liability.
So a subsequent basement doesn't have the ability to alter the document, to modify the document?
Sure they can, but they didn't in this case. That's the difference. That's the fundamental. Of course, they can go back and rewrite it. Absolutely.
But you didn't say other. I mean, it was supposed to go this far. So correct,
but the Gemara is saying because it went that far, by definition, it's a flawed document. Beis Din would have absolute right to just rewrite it. The difference is, we're going to ask why didn't Rabba rewrite it. We'll see that in just a little bit. So Rabba says, what she's saying is fine, even if the document is void, what she's claiming is, that's okay. So fine, I can't collect payers on the time of the document. But Beis Din still identified field A. Beis Din announced field A, that's enough by definition to allow me to collect from that date. So Amarla, Hanini, the Heichid, the Lokasav, to Usabat Karta. So normally what we would say is, you're right, Beis Din's proclamation would be binding or would be valid when the document wasn't flawed. Haval Heicha, the Ksiv, Ta'usabat Karta, Leslan Ba. But Rabba said, where the document is mistaken, again, what it does is it calls the entire process into question. Amar Leiva, Ha, Amar, Huda, Amar Achrayas. Taos Sofer, but yet again we learned Rabosai that Achrayas Taos Sofer. Now Rabosai, what that means? Achrayas Taos Sofer means. Look at Rashi. Shtar Achrayas Taos Sofer. Shtar Shein Bo Achrayas Government Chasim Mishvada. Now Rabosai, we assume like this. Now this is a totally different case. If I sell a property to Reuven, right? And again, Rabosai, the automatic assumption is most real estate transactions, when you sold real estate, always came with Achrayas, always came with responsibility. That in the event that field was seized, that the seller would make the buyer whole. If let's say you have a document that didn't have achrayas in it, we assume that what? That was a clerical mistake. That was a scribal mistake. We ascribe that mistake to a mistake with the scribe. So what happens? So the Gemara says, Amrali Rabba, Baha Lekonimar Tao Sofer. So why don't we say the same thing over here? Why don't we just say the document was a mistake? The Sofer didn't mean to write that Rav Chiya had personal liability. He meant like in any normal case, liability is capped at what? At the estate property. To which the Gemara says, Rava said, because in this case, he can't say Tal Sofer, Debahi afilu Rabba bar Shila toy, Meikara hu Sofer, Meikara hu Sofer, Hani vahani didei, Mali mehani, Mali mehani. Let's say, to which the Gemara says, no, you know why this whole issue, you know what Rava really understood? Rava understood that Rabba bar Shila purposely had this document written in this way. Why? Because Rabba bar Shila actually felt that Lamaisa, Reb Chiya should have the obligation to go ahead and pay from either estate property or his personal property. Because Rabbi Shila said, look, at the end of the day, whether it's personal property or estate property, it's all what? It's all what? It all belongs to Reb Chiya. So what does it matter if he pays from these or he pays from these? Therefore, we'll say what's coming out over here is Rabbi Shila purposely wrote the document in the way that he wrote it. He purposely wrote it in a way that would convey personal liability to Rav Chiya, because from his perspective, what did it matter if it was estate property that Rav Chiya had, if it was personal property that Rav Chiya had? It's all Rav Chiya's property anyway. Therefore, he should have to pay it. But Rabba bar Shila was wrong. Why? Veloi, it's not correct. Zimnin da'azlo umishabchaluhu, because sometimes it can happen that what? She invests money in the Yisomim's property, udebaila machsefe, and what's going to happen? Again, her husband's property, her deceased husband's property, becomes machsefe. Rashi says, shelo yashpichem, hayore shubatuach shiyachsar miyikach eshelo miyada, viyomer lo telishali hamishubat lech. So what happens? V'amr shakil didach, Vahavli didi, you take yours, I'll take mine. Va'asi la'afuke laz al-beidina. And ultimately, again, what's going to happen? What's going to happen is that it's going to be moti laz and beizin, that beizin is only awarding her inferior properties. So what comes out in this case, particular case over here, is that l'maisa, so here's what's fascinating. At the end of the day, because remember, again, let's tie this all back together. At the end of the day, the almana's claim was correct. Because remember, how do we paskin? We pass like the Chachamim, and therefore again on both sides, when a woman is living in her father's home, there is a statute of limitations for collection ksuba, and that is what? 25 years. When she's living in the Yisomim's home, or in her deceased husband's home, is there a statute of limitations on collection of the ksuba? Absolutely not. Now, both sides, remember, this whole discussion of statute of limitations only comes up when there's no document. If there's a document, then there's no statute of limitations at all. But assuming there's no document, if she's living in her husband's home, no statute of limitations. Why? Because even though she didn't breathe the word of ksuba for 25 years, we assume, why didn't she breathe the word of the ksuba? Why? Why? She was embarrassed. The Yisomim are taking care of her. She's living in the house, right? She's part of the family. It's awkward to bring up that ksuva. Therefore, because it was awkward, her not mentioning it for 25 years does not mean mechila. Therefore, Rabbi said, in this case of Rabbi Chiya, so Rabbi Paskin, even though your sister-in-law / mother-in-law was living in her father's home, and even though what, she said nothing for 25 years, but since you yourself said that what, you're bringing her your meals on your shoulder every single day, she was embarrassed to bring up the ksuva. Therefore, her non-mentioning it for 25 years does not mean she's mochel or mocheles. Therefore, she's still entitled to it. The problem that happened with Rabba, so really what ended up happening with Rabba Bosa is a problem with the vehicle of collection. The problem is that Rabba was of the opinion that Rabbi Chiya therefore has to pay her the ksuva, but Rabba made Rabbi Chiya personally liable. And I will say that is not the halacha. The halacha is that an inheritor is never personally liable. So again, I will say, had Rabba not felt that Rabbi Chiya was personally liable, but just made a mistake in the shtar, that's okay. Mistake in the shtar, and Seth, this is what you were saying. Mistake in the shtar, that we can overlook. You can say, achrayas tal soferu. The problem is it wasn't a mistake in the shtar. What does a mistake in? It is a mistake in the halacha. Therefore, again, on both sides, so Rabba felt that Rabbi Chiya should be personally liable, wrote the shtar to reflect that. The problem is what? Rabbi Chiya is not personally liable. And therefore, the mice again, although the amana will be entitled to collect her ksuva, even after 25 years of silence, they will have to go ahead and rewrite a brand new shtar at karta, a brand new shtar of collection. But Rabbi say she will not be entitled to collect back payros for anything because the shtar itself was void. Hajjan Allah, no say. Shkoya.
But there's no problem with Rabbi's original holding. Forget about the level of liability. There's no problem with his holding that the 25-year statute of limitations did not apply?
Say that once more, the 25 years.
The original, forget about the liability question, but his original holding is that the 25-year statute of limitations did not apply.
Correct.
In this situation.
That, no, that everybody was okay with because the Svara was there.
But The earlier question that I was going to ask was, so there's no such thing as a firm statute of limitations? Every statute of limitations is subject to the particular circumstances of a case?
There is a firm statute. The firm statute of limitations would be where she's living in her father's home, and there's no kisufa, there's no potential embarrassment from the Yisomim. That's the firm statute of limitations.
So we could have applied here also, it's just we had the case of kisufa.
That is correct.
Now, we've previously learned in other places that somebody that's a tzaddik is supposed to behave above the letter of the law and nicely. So here, Rebbe, he is really trying to. Because he's clearly owes her.
And he's trying to. And she hasn't mentioned it. So why does he owe her?
Because that's what the halacha is. He does owe her.
No. So if you're Rebbe Chiya, you pass like the chachamim. You assume that chachamim meant.
But he's wrong. He went to bank and he lost.
Oh, you're saying, why did you ignore the Pesach of Rabba?
Clearly.
Oh, so you thought Rabba was wrong.
Oh, that's nice.
How many people go to bed?
Terrific.
Now, remember again, he is Rabbi Chiya.
Even more so.
He's Rabbi Chiya, except for he felt that Rabba was mistaken on the halacha.
Well, he had his chance.
I'm sorry?
He had his chance. He blew it.
What do you mean he had his chance?
He had his chance to convince everybody.